Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus. Have you ever worried about where your next meal will come from? Have you ever come home to an empty fridge and had no idea where you'll get food to fill it up? Have you ever had to face the choice of paying for shelter or paying for food? That's a reality for thousands of families in New Mexico. What we used to call food stamps is now the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, but we'll also use the term food stamps this hour, since that's still what many people call it. According to data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, over 466,000 New Mexicans were signed up for SNAP benefits in February of this year. That's more than one out of five people in our state. On today's show, we're going to dive into the history of concerns about management of the federal food assistance program here in New Mexico, and we're going to hear how different people are using the program. This is part of broader issues covered by the public health team here at KUNM. We're going to start with the controversy in the news right now. A group of current and former state workers recently testified they were forced to change applications for food assistance to keep people from accessing emergency benefits. We have Joey Peters with us. Joey's a senior reporter with NM Political Report. He went to Las Cruces last week for the latest hearing in the case involving the Human Services Department. Thanks for being here, Joey.
Thank you.
Let's start with what the workers testified to. What did they say their managers told them to do?
Basically, whenever they had overdue emergency food stamp applications, it was a department policy, they're saying, to add fake assets to these applications and thus make them not qualify for emergency benefits.
And last week, more workers testified too, and supervisors were also called to the stand. What happened then?
Three supervisors, actually the director of ISD, pleaded their Fifth Amendment rights and didn't respond to almost 100 questions total.
So they pled the Fifth almost 100 times.
Yes.
And what do we know now about what evidence did workers bring forward about these allegations that they're testifying to?
One of the workers brought, or actually I think two of the workers on Friday brought some evidence. Another worker who had testified last month had said that her emails had been deleted on one of the cases she had testified on when she came back. And she said she didn't delete them and that administrators have access to her emails.
And this is now in the news. Other state officials are responding. What are state and federal officials looking into when it comes to these allegations?
I guess whether there was a policy of this widespread fraud in the department and what to do about it.
In your reporting, have you spoken with HSD?
I've tried many times. On Friday, they actually brought their PIO down there, and I walked with him outside of the court, and he wouldn't answer any questions and told me to email him some questions. So I've been emailing him every day since, and I haven't heard anything.
In late June, HSD is supposed to bring the results of an internal investigation to court. What questions are unanswered right now that we might get some answers to in future hearings?
I mean, with those three administrators taking the Fifth, we don't know what they knew or if they were directing this policy. We don't know what the Secretary Brent Earnest knew about this. So all we know is what the employees are alleging.
You've covered a lot of other court cases and big stories. Have you seen this before, this pleading the Fifth?
Not in real life. I read it once in a transcript of a hearing, but no, I've never seen anything like this. I've seen it in the movies.
And what are you going to be, you're looking for some answers on from HSD, anything else that you're looking into with the impact of this, these allegations?
Well, actually, I mean, a lot of the focus is on SNAP and adding these fake assets, but there's a whole lot more to this case, including how they've been processing applications for immigrants and lots of other stuff. It's a big, complex, ongoing case.
Just the start of the conversation. Thanks, Joy. We want to hear from you. Are you using the SNAP program? How much money do you receive each month to buy food? And is it enough to carry you through the entire month? Or do you have to go to food banks to ask family to help make up the difference? Have you applied for emergency assistance and not received it? Join our conversation today by calling 277-5866. Outside of Albuquerque, you can also call 877-899-5866. Also in studio today, we have Sovereign Hager, an attorney with the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. They brought that case that Joey was just talking about. and Miles Conway, a union representative for AFSCME Council 18, which represents the Human Service Department workers from the Income Services Division, including those involved in this case. We did invite the Human Services Department more than half a dozen times by email and phone over the past 2 weeks to provide someone to speak with us about the SNAP program and the allegations that employees were told to falsify information on emergency applications. Spokesman Kyler Narrison sent us a written statement last night. Quote, first and foremost, our priority is ensuring that New Mexicans who need assistance get the help they need. We take any allegations of misconduct seriously, and we've launched an independent investigation into these matters, unquote. But again, we don't have someone from HSD with us this hour to talk about how they're specifically responding to the allegations, what efforts they're taking to address the ongoing issues. We won't have that on the show today because they did not respond to our repeated request to make someone available. Sovereign, with the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty, what are you seeking now from the federal government in these hearings that are underway?
Well, we're really seeking relief from the federal court. So we represent a class of plaintiffs that are the applicants for food and medical assistance in New Mexico. And since 2013, we've brought five separate cases seeking to bring the department into compliance with some very basic provisions of federal law for the processing of Medicaid and food stamp applications. The state has not complied with those orders. They include things like making notices comprehensible, timely providing food assistance to families who are eligible. The court has set deadlines. HSD has picked deadlines of their own that have gone into court orders and then missed those deadlines. And, you know, now about 3 years later, we're asking the court to really appoint someone. We think it's necessary to get someone into the department that has the authority and expertise to take these actions that ensure that eligible families get the assistance they need. So we're asking the court as a remedy here to appoint someone that would have the authority to take actions necessary to ensure eligible families receive the food and medical assistance they're entitled to.
You talk to clients, people who are potentially impacted by this. What's at stake here? What happens if they don't get emergency benefits?
Well, the whole purpose of the emergency food stamps or expedited food stamps is to get families that are in dire need food within 7 days. And the consequence of not getting those eligible families those benefits is that, you know, one, they don't eat. Two, money that, you know, they're forced to maybe spend on food, they can't spend on rent, end up being evicted, not being able to keep the lights on. Really critical things that people need just to have some sort of basic necessities covered. That doesn't happen if people don't have food. Mm.
And Miles, when did the union first start hearing about these allegations from the workers you represent?
It's been a long time, you know, over a year, you know, and longer than that, really. But in order for those employees to step forward, you know, puts them in an incredibly, you know, dangerous and uncomfortable position where they're, you know, breaking chain of command and violating, you know, really kind of the rules of the road as far as what it means to be a state employee. So in order for employees to step forward, it was putting their jobs at risk. So we were unable to get either any documentable proof that it was happening for a long time, or anybody to step forward. But once one person stepped forward, I think the floodgates started opening.
Did the workers you've talked to try to address this internally before going public?
Absolutely. And I think that's begun to come out in court, you know, that they have a paper trail. And you know, that's part of, you know, what we do in the labor movement is we train our employees like document. You've got to keep your own set of files on this because, you know, in recent weeks, emails are now starting to disappear. So thankfully, a lot of our, you know, activists, they started printing out those screens of their communications with the higher-ups so that – and it was to protect themselves.
Yeah.
If they were to be called out in court.
You mentioned fear of retaliation. Is there evidence that that's happened so far?
Yeah, it's like policy. I mean, breaks these sort of improper practices that are in place and expedites a case on the eighth or ninth day so that a family eats, they're subject to retaliation. That's been entered into court. That is factual.
Hmm. We want to hear from folks listening today. Have you been following this case, and are you following it because you're using the SNAP program or you have used the SNAP program in the past?
or you have used the SNAP program in the past. Is this something that you're feeling passionate about and you want to share your feelings on? Give us a call at 277-5866. Again, that's 277-5866. Outside of Albuquerque, 877-899-5866. Let's take a call now from Jude in Albuquerque. Jude, what's your comment today?
Hi. Heard the comment that you made from the Human Services Department that says that their number one priority is to get food to the people in need. But it seems to me that their practice, not just in this lawsuit, but their other practices sort of discredit that. They've been trying to make it more difficult for people to apply, putting on work requirements. They refuse to simplify the application process. They don't do express lane eligibility, which would simplify enrollment for both SNAP and Medicaid. And it just seems to me that the department keeps putting up or trying to put up barriers for people to get both Medicaid and SNAP. And it sort of discredits what they said about we're really trying to get food to people who need it, and I wonder if folks would like to comment on that.
Sovereign, would you like to pick that up?
Sure. I mean, I think those are some really good points. We have, from the beginning in this case, asked the department to take what are really some common sense solutions, approaches to providing benefits that streamline the application process, accurately train workers, and give them a comprehensive reference, a manual for how to process cases, make information technology work in a way that makes sure eligible families can receive those benefits and doesn't create a barrier. These are common sense solutions that, you know, ensure eligible people get the benefits they need, but also ensure that the department is taking the most streamlined process possible. Saves the state money. You know, we talk about these allegations of fraud and the information that was coming forward. Workers provided directives they were given that didn't allow them to process cases, delayed benefits to the families. In fact, even when a worker knew that a family was eligible for emergency food assistance, because they hadn't processed it within 7 days, the workers had to give the case to a supervisor, further delaying the provision of benefits, putting it through more bureaucratic process instead of just giving the benefits of families. And this is a directive that came from the leadership. And, you know, in recent years, this has been the practice. And the workers documented that then the supervisors took action in those cases to sort of cover up the fact that the benefits were provided late. And that's really unfortunate, not just because families, you know, were going without food, but also because we don't have an accurate assessment of how the department's doing in terms of providing those benefits. We can't fix these problems. We can't streamline the process unless we have accurate information about the processing. So we've continually pushed for some of these common sense, I think, really basic changes that need to be made. And the department has not made these changes. And that's why we're in this position in federal court.
And Miles, I understand social workers take an oath that guides how they do their job. Do frontline ISD workers in the union feel they've been asked to violate that oath?
Yeah, absolutely. That came out in court. You know, the National Association of Social Workers, there's a code of ethics. And, you know, I think that's what, you know, that in the end was the final straw that some of our employees that are represented by the union, you know, just said, I can't do this anymore. I have to speak out. It is my duty, you know, as part of the oath that I've taken.
Mm. And do you feel like the workers who've retired or left already, did they have an easier time coming forward?
They did.
Yeah.
They did. Easier. They did, you know. But, you know, to that caller's question, you know, not only is the architecture of this system, it's just inherently complex, right, with all the federal regulations and the state regulations. But beginning with the $60 million Deloitte Aspen system that we've put in place in New Mexico to handle all these benefits, I mean, it has been unnecessarily made more complex, you know, to the point where you're like, is this a systematic effort to deny people food aid and other types of aid? I mean, this computer system, Jude, you know, I mean, this thing that's in place, it's failing across the country. In Kentucky, before they put the system in place, place. They distributed a manual to the employees saying, FYI, it's not going to work. Here's your workarounds. We haven't done that in New Mexico. We're kind of maintaining a cover your butt mentality that everything's great. Don't worry.
Question, interesting new question there, or issue that you've raised. Thanks, Miles. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're talking about food assistance today. Have you used food stamps to get by when you were struggling? Did you feel any shame in using the program? Did anyone make you feel like you shouldn't use those food benefits that you qualified for? I'm Sarah Gustavus. We want to hear from you. The number to call to join us today on the KUNM Call-In Show is 277-5866. Outside of Albuquerque, 877-896-5866. We'll be back in just a moment.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
Support comes from the New Mexico Philharmonic, presenting Salute Under the Stars, Saturday the 28th at 8 p.m., Memorial Day weekend at the ABQ Biopark Zoo. Gates open at 6:30, tickets and more at nmphil.org.
On the next American Radio Works documentary, a growing number of countries around the world are water-stressed.
We are forced to carry water in pots on our heads and fetch the water from a distance of more than a mile.
Some people have too little water, some have too much.
In the last days of the monsoon, the storm was furious.
Listen for Thirsty Planet on 8 p.m.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. Again, the number to call today, 277-5866. If you can't get through on the phones, you can also send us a message on Twitter or Facebook, or go to KUNM.org to post your comment there on the Call-In Show page. I'd like to welcome now Carlos Navarro to the conversation. Carlos is the state coordinator for Bread for the World. Bread for the World is a faith-based organization that focuses on legislative advocacy that includes writing letters to elected officials about policies. Carlos also serves on the national board. Thanks for joining us, Carlos.
My pleasure.
Carlos, what are we seeing here in New Mexico? How does that compare to what you're talking about at the national level when it comes to the SNAP and food assistance?
I don't have the specifics on SNAP, but New Mexico consistently ranks high in terms of food insecurity, and especially a couple of years ago, the Feeding America put out the report on Map the Meal Gap, and they said that we had the highest rate of child hunger. And, you know, if children are hungry, that means the families are hungry. There's a lot of need for the program, and it seems like that rather than making it easier for people to access food, that the state is making it harder. We don't think that's right.
Mm. And as you've been watching this unfold in the news, this hearing, what are you worrying about when it comes to families who might be impacted?
Yeah, well, The problem now is that there's very few places where families can turn to, and so when it gets harder, when people are taking off the rolls of eligibility, then they won't be able to find food. I think a lot of the food pantries are already they've reported an increase in the number of people needing food, and they're stressed to the max, and I think something is wrong societally.
Mm. Now, often we hear folks saying that, you know, the faith community can pick up some of the slack when folks need help. Do you think that that's possible?
No. I think this is back in 2013 when the House proposed huge cuts in SNAP, the suggestion was I think it was $133.5 billion, at $36 billion over 10 years. The suggestion was that the faith community could pick up the slack, but a report from Bread for the World, and using statistics from the Hartford Institute for Religion and Research, or 135 religious congregations. We're not talking just Christian churches, but we're talking about mosques and synagogues and other communities of faith. Each of those communities would have to come up with an additional $50,000 a year to make up for the proposed cuts in the budget in 2013. This is an interfaith effort, of course. Back in 2013, Bread for the World joined with Sojourners and a few other groups to create the Circle of Protection to try and preserve, protect some of the integrity of the feeding programs, especially SNAP.
Carlos, you've worked on this issue of food access for decades. How does your faith influence your work?
Well, let me quote an activist from Alexandria, from Troy, New York, and she says, feeding the hungry is not a choice, it's a moral imperative. The way I see it, and I think more recently, we've always felt the words of Pope Francis were very important, but even before Pope Francis came on the scene, what he was saying is what is key to our values. We just need to come together and address the issue of hunger and poverty. I think it's part of our, and it's not just, Bread for the World is primarily focused on the Christian churches, but I think every community of faith has it in its own sacred scriptures that we have to take care of the least. Here in Albuquerque, we're trying to do that in a coalition with Interfaith Hunger Coalition to come together, specifically around the report that came out, the Map the Meal Gap, we saw there was no place for the faith community to come together to talk about addressing hunger in New Mexico together, so we're attempting to create the Interfaith Hunger Coalition also. But I think it's an important part of all our faith philosophies.
Carlos, thank you so much for calling in today and sharing that perspective. Carlos Navarro, State Coordinator for Bread for the World here in New Mexico. The phone lines are full. I'd like to go to those now. We have Conrad in Socorro. Conrad, what are your thoughts that you want to share with us today?
Pitiful. Very pitiful. What they're doing here in the state of New Mexico I want to speak for the elderly and everybody included that is on the poverty line. And here in Socorro, it's an epidemic. It's pretty bad. And there is people that are, I don't mean to get emotional, but we've been treated pretty bad in this state of New Mexico. When we go into the Walmart to buy food with $68 and come out with, it's really bad. It's really pitiful. It just don't make sense to a country that is so rich.
16.
And yet they can treat people outside this country better than they do their own people here. And it is an emotional thing. And there's people out there pretty hungry. And it's very sad. I'm a 74-year-old senior citizen here in Socorro. And Socorro's a good town. But I'll tell you, they need to straighten out some of these people that take over our lives that way. And that's wrong for us to. At one time, I used to go in. They denied me a few years back. And I'd go into the Walmart, look around the food and the vegetables and the fruits and walk out with nothing, just wanting to get help. And it is bad. And there is a certain person there in this office here in Socorro, food stamp office, and she's very aggressive. And I know the other workers don't like it, and I can see it on their faces. I've been there several times to address this matter. And it's just like a no caring. In that office, there are some very good people that were born and raised here, and they know the situation. So we need an investigation. Clearly, we need an investigation to straighten this matter out and quit helping out. Well, help people, but not like the way they're doing. And this SNAP program is criminal. Mm. It is criminal. So why do we have to go by a guideline how much we eat a month and what we're allowed to spend a month? And our Social Security checks go only so far, and it is under the poverty line.
Yeah, Conrad.
But at least we do get help. Well, thank you for listening to me. I'm sorry that I I got a little emotional there.
Yeah, Carlos, I understand this. This is emotional. Food is important, and how you're treated as a human being is important. And thank you for calling in today and speaking from the heart. You raise a lot of important issues of how much assistance people are getting, how far that will go, and what you can buy in the store. Our phone lines are full. I'd like to take a call now from Eric in Albuquerque. Eric, I understand you have a question for us today.
Yeah, hi, and thanks for covering this this subject. Can you break it down a little bit more, be a little bit more abstract about what the incentives are? I don't understand why a government worker, a state worker, would deny benefits to somebody who needs them. And I know that, you know, there's the people that need the benefits, there's the worker that wants to give them the benefits, and then there's, I guess, the supervisor that is somehow that is involved in denying it. So if you guys can break that down a little bit. And I just want to make one quick comment, and that is the way that people are treated by state workers in this state is epidemic. Rude would be a nice way of putting it. I've been in state offices, any office, anywhere, whether it's MVD or HHS, just to listen in. And you'd be surprised just the entire tone and the attitude that they have towards the people that are targeted for being helped. And it's epidemic. And this is years. I've lived here since I was 9 years old. And it's incredible to see that it's almost like a culture within the state as to how they actually treat people. The younger they are, the younger ones tend to be a little bit nicer. But the ones that have been in the state for a while, the gentleman who just spoke, the indignity that they have to withstand in order to get that assistance is pathetic. It's unbelievable. And I'm a civil servant myself with Homeland Security, and I would never treat another citizen that way. And it's epidemic. It happens all the time. But I'll hang up, and if you guys can answer that first question about just breaking it down, who gets what, what's the incentive for not giving those benefits. Thank you.
Thanks for your call today, Eric. Sovereign Hager from the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. Will you respond to that question?
Sure. So the provision, emergency food benefits have to be provided within 7 days under federal law. And the federal government requires that the state report on what percentage of cases for emergency SNAP what percentage of people are provided those benefits timely. And the USDA requires a state to meet a threshold of 95% of families eligible for expedited SNAP timely receiving those benefits. So the state has to report this ongoing. It's also been the topic of an issue in our federal court case with HSD. What we learned from the worker testimony is that the process of giving a family emergency food benefits starts with screening. And instead of screening the case and then providing the benefits within 7 days, either because of worker error or a backlog, those benefits don't get provided all the time. And when a worker subsequently discovers a case that's eligible for benefits within 7 days, more than 7 days have passed, the workers are then directed to pass that case to a supervisor, and the supervisor enters assets into the case file, making it appear that the family is not eligible for emergency assistance. And it's worth saying just how destitute you have to be to qualify for those 7-day benefits. So that's for families who have less than $100 a month in income, less than $150 in assets to their name, or families whose cost of housing is higher than their income. So, and workers testified that two things are done. One, either adding assets into the case file, making it appear that the family was never entitled to benefits within 7 days. So the fact that the case was processed, you know, after 15 days, 10 days, 30 days, doesn't show up as an untimely case when the state reports on that. But they also testified that supervisors change the shelter costs of the household to make them lower than the income, also to make it appear as if a family was not eligible for expedite. And workers testified that in cases where this is occurring, the benefits are delayed further for those families. So the case may be discovered as late on the 10th day. If assets are entered, the case continues to pend for full processing. The family would need to do an interview and turn in documents, whereas if the worker just provided the benefits that the family was entitled to, even if it was late, they would get those benefits immediately and it would be able to do the interview and the rest of the process after that first month of benefits.
Sovereign, I have a quick question for you. You said $150 in assets. Does a savings account, a car, what counts as assets?
savings account. A car only counts if it's your second vehicle, property you own where you don't live, things like that. Things that could be turned into money.
You know, and SNAP is a federal program. Does it cost the state, though? If more people are signing up, is that going to cost the state something?
It doesn't. In fact, it brings money into the state. We know that every dollar of federal, the benefits are 100% funded by the federal government. Every dollar of food stamp benefits that are spent in our local grocery stores, places where people buy food across the state in some of our poorest counties, generates $1.70 in economic activity. So that's a huge boon to our economy in New Mexico. And when we deny people those benefits or when eligible families don't receive what they're entitled to, we're also costing our state money.
Miles Conway, union representative for AFSCME Council 18, you wanted to make a comment as well?
I did. To Eric's question more directly, like, what's the incentive? I think that this administration in particular for the last 6 years has wanted to run our public services on a shoestring. We are down to the skeleton on staffing. And that's, I think, Eric, also what's going on of the kind of pressures that the employees are under in those field offices. The kind of just it's very difficult for them to be able to do the work they're expected to do. So in order to protect all of this sort of trickle-down economics, tax cuts for wealthy corporations or wealthy people in this country, this administration in particular has decided that they're going to run government on a shoestring. And if we're reporting bad numbers to the federal government, that doesn't fit in with that narrative because it reveals that we are unable to deliver the public services at the rate of resources we're giving them. Mm.
You can call in and join this conversation today. Do you have a question or do you have a comment you want to make? What do you think is missing in public conversations about food assistance here in New Mexico right now? And we also want to know, do you have a job that's physically demanding? And is it challenging for you to go to work because you're hungry? Are you using SNAP benefits right now? Or are you thinking you might use them in the future? Call in to the conversation 277-5866. Again, that's 277-5866. Toll free 877-899-5866. Let's go now to Jay in Albuquerque. Jay, you have a question for us.
Yeah, my question is, you're talking about the benefit. Okay, and Conrad kind of hit the point. So my question is, general assistance, does that fall into the same category that is being sought after? Because I'm disabled, I have a caregiver that comes in every day, and I was denied twice the general assistance. So does that fall into the category?
Sovereign.
Sure. So what we're talking about here in this case are food assistance benefits. And general assistance is a state-funded cash assistance program for adults who cannot work because they're disabled. And we know that when people can't work, food stamp benefits, unfortunately, are not enough to cover expenses and basic needs. In fact, food stamp benefits are really only around $1.40 per person per meal. So general assistance is there for disabled adults, and it's a small monthly benefit, and it's also administered by the Income Support Division. So to the extent we're talking about systemic problems in the provision of benefits, so the fact that there isn't a manual for workers that accurately states how to process a case and what the legal requirements are, the fact that our administrative code doesn't comply with federal law, on the processing of benefits, the fact that workers don't receive adequate training. I think all of those issues do prevent eligible people from getting general assistance as well, because it's within the same system that is administering the food stamp benefits. It's within the Income Support Division.
I'd like to bring in now Reed Russell, Social Services Manager at Healthcare for the Homeless. They work with folks who are using these benefits. Reed, thanks for calling in today.
Sure. How are you today?
I'm good. How does your organization help people access SNAP benefits?
What we do is, it's actually in our resource center is the primary way that we do that. And individuals come in and they just let us know sort of what's going on and that they need that assistance. And then we have staff that do the application for them, assist them with that, as well as their Medicaid application and GA application.
Some folks have mentioned already in this show, calling in today, that it can be challenging to navigate the system. Is that an experience you hear from people that you're working with?
It's very challenging. That's why we have specific staff to help folks out that come in and need that assistance. It's very difficult system to maneuver, and you get a lot of mixed messages, a lot of weird repeat letters in the mail. So we have probably, five or six staff members that work specifically with that issue to help people navigate those systems.
Now, Reed, folks who are homeless who have those sovereign mentioned what it takes to qualify for emergency benefits, you know, $100 in income, less than $150 in assets, and or if your housing costs exceed your income, which could be if you're living in a hotel because you're homeless. What are you hearing from people in that situation who qualify for emergency assistance? Are they getting it?
We've heard various things. Some people, it seems like they have gotten it. Other people are repeatedly denied, and they don't know why. Occasionally it seems like someone will let us know that they've been denied once or twice. And then when one of our staff members intercedes and works directly with ISD, then it gets resolved pretty quickly, which is disturbing in and of itself. I don't understand why the citizens of this state would need to have special advocates work with them just to get their food stamps.
And Reed, how is food part of creating stability for folks who are experiencing homelessness?
Well, if you don't have food, then you can't manage at all. I mean, you know, imagine getting up and not having breakfast or lunch or knowing where to go to get that. And so you go from place to place all day long simply in search of food. And if your focus throughout the day is to find food, then you can't look for work. You can't look for housing. You have to meet your basic needs before you can do anything else.
Reed, we appreciate you taking the time to join us today for a few minutes.
Thank you.
Reed Russell with Healthcare for the Homeless. Our focus today on the KUNM Call-In Show is SNAP and food assistance. We've heard from a reporter, Joey Peters from NM Political Report, union representative, and we have Sovereign Hager from the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty here today. What do you think needs to happen to help hungry people get access to food here in New Mexico? Who should hold the state government accountable for meeting federal rules about food stamps? Or do you think those rules should change in some way? Give us a call at 277-5866 outside of Albuquerque, 877-899-5866. We'll be back in just a minute.
Support for this program comes from Planned Parenthood of New Mexico, hosting the annual Beer and Bands for Better Sex Education event on June 4th. Tickets and more information available on the Planned Parenthood Votes New Mexico Facebook page.
It isn't every day we get a new or newer vehicle. Some of us hang on until they've got 200, maybe 300,000 miles on them. Nothing wrong with that. But when it's time to get the next one, how great to send it off to continue to serve not just you and your family, but the entire community by funding KUNM. Give us a call and we'll send out a tow truck, handle the sale, then send you a tax receipt and a KUNM membership. What a great ending. Call 888-KUNM-CAR.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're talking about food assistance today. Have you applied for food stamps here in New Mexico or helped a family member or friend apply? What was your experience navigating the process? We just heard from Reed from Healthcare from the Homeless saying it can be complicated, it can be complex. Was that your experience? Did you have a hard time providing the right documents or getting the information you needed? We want to hear from you today, 277-5866. Again, that's 277-5866. We did invite the Human Services Department to join us on the Call-In Show today. More than half a dozen times by email and phone, we got in touch with them, and they declined to provide someone to speak with us about the SNAP program and allegations that employees were told to falsify information on emergency food stamp applications. I'd like to go now to Ona in Albuquerque. Ona, thanks for calling in today. What's your comment?
Good morning, and thank you for doing this show. It's really important. I'm consistently frustrated with how much of this goes on where no one knows because nobody is covering it. So thank you. And thank you, Sovereign, for your work also. So I think that this is definitely representative of a systemic issue that crosses most of the departments in the in-state government. And it really represents a pejorative view of those who are in need. And the, you know, another example of this is when the work requirements were recently put in place for people who are beneficiaries of our TANF program. And it was put in place unnecessarily. The federal government was not requiring that and recognizing that that would actually be harmful in our state because there are so few jobs available, and we've had such low recovery. So it's everywhere, and it's absolutely hideous, and especially when we understand how many people are really suffering in this state and who are working terribly hard to move forward without the resources to do so.
Ona, thanks for calling in today. Sovereign, what do you think about Ona's comments?
Ona raises a really good point, and I think she's talking about the work requirements within the SNAP program that were to be a condition of receiving food assistance, that families or adults without children work 20 hours a week in order to get food benefits, and then the state has plans to expand that to even families with children. The state was not required to do that, you know, at a time when the state was out of compliance with federal law, needed to fix their worker training, their regulations, their IT system, stop requiring families to turn in paperwork that's not necessary to determine eligibility. At a time when all of this basic processing of food and medical assistance was not in compliance with the law, the state decided to add to that bureaucratic, those bureaucratic problems by adding these work requirements that the state did not have to do, because at that time we actually had the highest unemployment in the country. And I think it speaks to sort of a problem with priorities and not really having the will to make these very important changes that will improve things here in New Mexico. So we were troubled by that, and we ended up bringing a case in federal court about the implementation of those work requirements, where families who were experiencing homelessness were being required to comply, even though they should be exempt, for example. And the judge said no to the state. You cannot implement these requirements and terminate food assistance when you can't do so in a way that complies with the law. And here we are, and the state still hasn't fixed some of those really basic provisions of and brought their processing of food assistance applications into compliance with the law.
Sovereign, thanks for that context. I was Sovereign Hager, an attorney with the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. We have another caller, Nancy in Taos. Welcome to the conversation today. What would you like to share?
Hi. Well, everybody keeps saying the state and the state and the state, and I wish somebody would say Governor Martinez, because it's been said that she's aspiring to be the vice presidential candidate for the Republicans, and they are known as like a heartless party who seeks to cut these kinds of programs all over the nation. So this could be a reflection on her political leanings, and that's saying the unsayable, but it's about time that's said.
Nancy, thanks for your call today. Does someone have an alternative perspective out there? Do you want to say something about assistance and the politics today? 277-5866. Again, that's 277-5866. Sovereign, some of these issues go back before the Martinez administration. How far back?
Well, for example, we've been involved in this case trying to bring the department into compliance with federal law for over a decade. The case itself has existed for many decades. However, since 2013, we've had to seek the court's help much more frequently to bring the department into compliance with the law because of repeated violations. Workers testified, though, that this process of adding assets has existed for a long time, preceded this administration. However, again, we see that there was a directive within the leadership of the Human Services Department, particularly the Income Support Division, right now, really institutionalizing this practice by requiring late emergency food assistance cases to always go to supervisors. And the supervisors were the one that took this action. So while this process, troubling, yes, that it has existed for a very long time, it appears to have become more institutionalized in recent years.
And can you remind folks, this case that we're talking about today is actually connected to a case more than 20 years ago.
That's right. It's Deborah Hatton Gonzalez versus the Secretary of the Human Services Department. And it was a case brought over 20 years ago seeking to deal with the state's failure to provide a fair and equal opportunity to families, eligible families seeking to get food and medical assistance. It resulted in an order that sort of resuscitates the federal requirements for processing food and medical assistance applications. And the state has never fully implemented it. And so when the state violates federal law, when the state does not provide benefits to hungry families, we go into federal court representing the class of applicants and ask the court to order the department to comply with that original order.
This is the KUNM call-in show. You can find more information about our topic today at KUNM.org. We have Brooke Tafoya on the line. She's the operations director for New Day Youth and Family Services, an organization that serves homeless youth in Albuquerque. Brooke, New Day provides transitional living for young people who are learning the skills they need for adulthood. How is food assistance part of helping those young people build a stable life?
Oh, it's essential. It's really the key of you have to meet all of the basic needs first before you can go to the greater. And so, food, clothing, housing, emotional safety, physical safety, those things have to be met first. And so food and learning how to budget on nearly all of our young people who are in our transitional living program receive SNAP benefits. They're all between the ages of 16 and 22. They are on their own. They don't. Many of them have very little other assistance outside of the program and SNAP benefits. And so helping them figure out how do you live on a very, very small amount of money for food while simultaneously having to cover all the other things, hygiene and transportation and all those other pieces, is actually pretty complicated. And it's a pretty high art to be able to budget to that lean of a budget.
We've heard several people mention today that it's not enough money to get by for the whole month. There's some barriers that folks are facing. What about the people that you're working with? When those young people are trying to go to school and access food assistance, what barriers do they face?
Well, actually, what Reed was saying from Healthcare from the Homeless is a very similar story to our young people. Initially, we had young people just going on their own, and they were never getting benefits. It was always they needed one more piece of paper or something. There was just, it seemed like a kind of a revolving door of one more thing. And finally, we rearranged some staff schedules so we could have always a staff person going with them so they would have an advocate with them to support them through the process. Now, that's much smoother. The staff person is able to kind of help move all the parts, and when there's barriers, sometimes they have to advocate for the young person and, say, I don't think that's a real requirement, or I haven't had to do that in the past, or, hey, can you just hold on and let me go get something? So, I think it is unfortunate that we have to provide additional staff support just to ensure that our young people are receiving the benefits that they deserve.
Brooke, thank you so much for calling in today and briefly sharing some of those experiences. We've got that perspective in the show today. We appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
We have Christy on the line in Albuquerque. Christy, what's the comment you'd like to add to our conversation today?
I want to say that the system is designed to discourage people from applying in the first place. The form is written at too high a reading level. It's hard to navigate. I've volunteered helping people sign up for food stamps. And if you're helping someone, you have to simplify it when you're going through the questions. And then I also wanted to say that then they apply and they go through this process where they don't know if they get a letter saying if they've been denied, or they can't read the letters. The letters are written at too high a reading level. So it's designed for people who need the benefits, but they can't navigate the system.
That's an important point, Christy. Thank you so much for calling in today. Sovereign, you want to make a comment there?
Yeah, I wanted to address Christy's comment about the reading level. It's such an important point. Federal law requires that these notices be comprehensible to applicants, and federal courts and the federal court in our case has said that that means a sixth grade reading level or lower on notices that families receive. And it took years to get the state to even contract with someone to provide that kind of reading level analysis, and it is not complete. These notices are at too high of a reading level. They're also incomprehensible, and there's IT problems that make them populate with strange information that further confuses the issue. And this is one of the really critical fixes that helps ensure that families can get the benefits they need, that they understand why they aren't eligible if they aren't, so they have enough information to challenge that if they want to, so that they know what paperwork they need to provide to get that correct eligibility decision. It makes it so that, regular people that need the benefits can do what they need to do to get the help they need, so that we don't need lawyers and advocates just to get someone, you know, a monthly food assistance.
We have another advocate on the line. Gordon Yawicki is the prevention coordinator with the Albuquerque Indian Center. Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show, Gordon.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
What are you hearing from folks who come to the Indian Center and need some assistance and would be eligible for SNAP benefits?
Well, a lot of times the people that we deal with are experienced with poverty. So what we do is try to assist them with applications or even online applications and stuff. And a lot of times what we do is we feed people breakfast as well as lunch. And like I said, these are mostly pretty much people experiencing with poverty. So we have a lot of homeless veterans and different nationalities and stuff. We have people from South America, Central America, Cuba, all the way up to Alaska and Florida, Hawaii. So we generally provide services for pretty much everybody around who is experiencing poverty at the Albuquerque International District. So we're pretty much in the heart of people that are experiencing poverty. So what we do is we try to help them out with applications. Like I said, we'll have applications in stock or have them help them through navigating through computers too.
Yeah. Your staff is helping us, as some other organizations have also mentioned that they need to sit down and help people navigate that process.
Yeah, a lot of the times, and like the lady said, you know, a lot of it is just comprehending the whole application and stuff like that. So yeah, we do help them out and stuff, and it gets a little complicated at times too. So
yeah, Gordon, thank you so much for joining us for just a couple of minutes here on the show today.
Sure, thank you for having me, and glad to be on here.
Gordon is the prevention coordinator with the Albuquerque Indian Center. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're wrapping up here. Sovereign, where do we go from here? What's next? Are we going to see changes? Is it going to happen, do you think?
I hope so. You know, as you know, so our clients have said that, you know, the state really needs to step up. And I think we really look to the governor, the Secretary of Human Services Department to meaningfully, you know, respond to these allegations that have been brought forward. You know, the statement of the department was that they've launched an independent investigation. In fact, they are launching an internal investigation for the purposes of rebutting the allegations of workers in federal court. That doesn't seem like a meaningful search for the truth. We're also looking for the department to put leadership in place at the Income Support Division that can enforce these court orders, bring the department's processing into compliance with the law, and make it the least burdensome possible on eligible people, so that workers don't have such a difficult job, that they have accurate training and a comprehensive manual. These are very simple asks, and I hope that they will step up. Otherwise, we'll be looking to the court.
Sovereign Hager, an attorney with the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty, thanks for joining us today. Also, Miles Conway, union representative for AFSCME Council 18, which represents the Human Service Department workers from the Income Support Division, including those involved in this case. Final thoughts for the workers that you represent. What's next for them?
Well, I think that we just heard that, you know, somebody's calling for the resignation of the Human Services Secretary. You know, this is a make or break moment for him. I don't need him to be hiding behind the shadow of the Martinez administration shtick. He needs to get out there, demand accountability, and this is his moment to shine. He absolutely can fix this, and he does not need to be, you know, his head does not need to roll here.
We did invite the Human Services Department to provide someone today. They declined despite numerous phone calls and emails over the past 2 weeks. We did invite them to be here, though, and we would invite them in the future to join us to talk about this issue. That's all the time we have today. Thanks to everyone who shared their experiences and thoughts on food assistance here in New Mexico. The conversation doesn't have to end here. Find KUNM News on Twitter or go to the KUNM call-in show page at KUNM.org and share your comments there. Today's show is a collaboration between KUNM Public Health Team and New Mexico PBS. I'm Sarah Gustavus, producer of New Mexico and Focus on New Mexico PBS. Marisa DeMarco produced today's show. Jefferson White is the engineer. And Kaveh Movahed screened your calls. Elaine Baumgartel is the executive producer. Join us again at the same time next week as we open up the phone lines for another edition of the KUNM Call-In Show.